Montana. From the peaks of the Beartooth to the banks of the Clark Fork River, this is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Well, hey, I know people have a lot of questions about this Maryland bridge collapse, and especially after watching the video, it's like, wow, what in the world is going on there? I mean, you see the lights flicker on the cargo ship, and then at least the first video I saw, it looked like there was a little bit of a splash before the container ship then runs into the bridge and the whole thing comes tumbling down, basically. Anyway, I had a great message yesterday from one of our listeners in Billings, my friend Greg Franks. You guys know him. He's been on the show a couple of times here, the proprietor of the Summit Cigar Lounge. We've done our show from the lounge and more. But he said, hey, Aaron, you got to chat with my friend Kirk Ryder. He's a Billings senior high grad from the mid-80s. He got an appointment to the U.S. Merchant Marine Academy back then, and then took a commission into the U.S. Army Transportation Corps, commanded various logistics operations, including waterborne and overland units serving during Desert Storm. In the early 90s, he became a for-hire claims investigator, known in the industry as a marine surveyor, working throughout the Far East, based out of Hong Kong. And then during that time, he was hired to investigate and report to various interested parties regarding ship collisions, fires, and other ocean-going ship catastrophes. He moved back to Billings, Montana in the mid-90s and joined the Montana Tradeport Authority, helping to kickstart the Transtech development, and then returned to the maritime industry in the late 90s. And he's been working as a marine technical director for several large U.S. marine insurers. Kirk Ryder, hey, thanks for being with us this morning. I'm looking forward to hearing from you.
Hey, yeah, you bet. I was grateful to have the invite.
You're living near Atlanta, Georgia today, so I know you probably got a bunch of friends and family still back here in Montana, though. And so, anyway, it's going to be interesting to get your insight on all of this. Anything I missed in your bio there, man? What an incredible career it sounds like you've had.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. I mean, I do appreciate the short period of time I was able to be back in Billings, but yeah, it's a very interesting career, and it's kind of a strange place for a kid from Billings to end up. Thank you to Ron Marlinet back in the day. It's been a great journey. Some of the things that I've seen, especially over in the Far East, would blow your mind. I mean, this catastrophe that happened in Baltimore was certainly pretty traumatic, but these are not unusual circumstances in other parts of the world, and gratefully we don't see that too much in the United States.
Interesting. So, yeah, very unusual for us to see here in the United States of America, which is why a lot of people have questions and are certainly, you know, there's still, even though they're saying that there doesn't appear that they don't have any indications that this was deliberate, that this was some sort of a terrorist attack, or that this was some sort of a cyber attack. I know at least from the ship crew standpoint, they did put out a Mayday call, and a Mayday call that local law enforcement then used to save lives by evacuating the bridge. But anyway, I know our listeners have lots of questions, so looking forward to get Kirk Ryder's take, what he saw in that video, and more right after this.
I'm Chad Pergram with the Speaker's Lobby. GOP Georgia Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene has filed a resolution to vacate the Speaker's chair. However, it is not privileged, so it does not go to the front of the legislative line. But she could make the resolution live at any time. If she does do that, the House must consider it within two legislative days. But since the House is now going on a two-plus-week recess, that will not come up until at least the middle of April. House Speaker Mike Johnson controls the timing. Republicans never altered the rule allowing a solitary member to demand a vote to oust the Speaker. But if and when the House does consider Green's resolution, don't expect an automatic up-down vote, necessarily removing Johnson. The first vote would likely be a vote to table or set aside Green's resolution. Thus, the House would actually take a vote on killing Green's plan. Former North Carolina Representative Mark Meadows introduced a similar resolution for former House Speaker John Boehner in 2015, but never made it live. However, Boehner saw the writing on the wall and quit later that autumn. With the Speaker's Lobby, Chad Pergram, Fox News.
Here's a look at your real weather for Billings and Bozeman. We'll see a mix of clouds and sunshine across the area for today. Highs range from 53 in Billings to about 48 in the Bozeman area. For tonight, we can expect partly to mostly cloudy skies, low temperatures from the low to mid-30s, and the outlook for Thursday, Calls for developing rain showers, which could mix in with some snow early on in the Bozeman area. 49 in Bozeman to 60 in Billings. This is Weatherology meteorologist Paul Frombly.
Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, this is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, great to have Billings, Montana native Kirk Ryder on the program with us here this morning. Kirk, there's a lot of, you know, pretend experts on social media, Twitter, Facebook, et cetera. And there's real experts. But also, I mean, I don't want to, you know, downplay. It's good for people to ask questions. It's good for people to say, hey, wait a minute. Here's some questions I've got after seeing video and more. But you're an actual expert in this industry. What's your take based off of everything you've seen or read or heard about this bridge collapse in Maryland?
Well, it's like a number of things when accidents happen. There's a lot of events and sequences that lead up to, you know, the actual catastrophe. And this has all those earmarks. I think it's a very remote possibility that this could be a terrorist act. I know a lot of people look at that video and see some slight movements there at the end, but it's very hard to judge in the dark that you see there. I was sharing with Aaron on the break kind of an analogy to those of you that haven't seen or been around these large container vessels, that if you imagine maybe like a single person kayak that sit on top fishing kayak that you use, and you take that rudder off it that's about the size of your hand extended and replace it with a playing card. That's about the size in kind of ratio of the rudder that's on the ship. So it's not very capable at low speeds. And especially based on the reports that I've read, the power actually went off well before they came close to the bridge. So they'd actually lost steerage much before the video shows. And once that propeller stops moving, there's really the rudder, no matter how big it is completely ineffective at those low speeds. So I think that, you know, people can be confident that it wasn't a terrorist accident, but there are certainly a lot of things that need to be learned in how we protect our infrastructure in the United States. I mean, this loss is going to be catastrophic to our economy, as well as the marine industry or marine insurance industry in particular. I mean, there are estimates that this is going to be as costly as the Costa Concordia that rolled over and sank over in Italy. The other part of this that's pretty profound is that this will shut down the port of Baltimore, which is the 17th busiest port in the United States. Thank goodness it wasn't one of our more busy ports, because it would have even a higher impact. But basically 90% of this port is shut down for a very extended period of time because of this accident.
Yeah, because they're going to have to even, and then, of course, the bridge impacts and the shipment of hazardous materials along that I-95 corridor, the bridge itself. But at least if they can get the remnants of the bridge out of the way, they can resume port operations, is my assumption. But so when a lot of people watch this video, I can see why a lot of people are like, wait a minute, this looks very suspicious, especially to us, because, you know, we don't have the merchant marine background, the maritime industry background that you have. But when we see it, okay, we see the power flicker off, we see the lights flicker off, and then we see, I saw a splash in the video, and then you see the ship look like it veers right at, what would you call it, the pylon underneath the bridge, you know, and so you look at that, and I can see why people think, hey, this looks like it could have been a cyber attack, where somebody remotely could have cyber attacked that vessel, turned the power off, and then veered it straight at the point of that bridge where they wanted to take it down. But you were kind of describing in a way that, okay, they lose power. It seems like, from your perspective, they followed their standard operating procedure. The splash that I saw was the anchor dropping down, because they were trying to slow down. After losing power, they wanted to drop anchor fast. And then just, like you say, you lose that rudder, and then that's why even a massive cargo ship would veer the way it veered.
Yeah, you know, and this is all speculation, but based on the reports I've read online from the Pilots Association, there was a debrief they had yesterday, and I couldn't really tell from the reports when the anchors were actually dropped. That's kind of standard procedure when you have vessel of this size kind of coming up on a possible collision. But unfortunately, because of the depth of the water and the length of the anchor chain, it probably didn't have enough time to really take hold and slow the vessel down, obviously enough. But it is very possible that that splash you see is anchor. I kind of have another theory. I did some research online with some of the tools I have with our company that give me satellite images. I thought it was very interesting that this particular bridge, built in the 1970s, in fact, opened in 76, didn't have very much fendering around these structures that support the bridge. If people go online and start looking at some of the bridges in New York City, some of the larger bridges there, they're protected by a large kind of fence around these critical elements of the bridges that we call fenders. And this particular bridge, while it had a concrete section down there, it was actually built into the structure of the bridge. And I think that's eventually going to be found to be a contributing factor, because the bridge or the vessel is actually able to strike the major or principal components of the bridge, as opposed to maybe being slowed or pushed off by a fender system that you see in many of the large ports.
Very interesting. Yeah, it might raise questions. Why was fendering never installed, or just do they only do it on newer bridges? Do they not update existing ones with those types of fendering systems?
You know, and that's the hindsight in 2020 on this incident. Hopefully we're going to take that into perspective and put some money into protecting the bridges, the rest of the bridges around the country. Because we do hear about this happening often. I mean, if you appreciate 1926, we didn't have vessels of this size. This vessel is referred to as what they call a Neo-Panamax vessel. It's not the largest out there. It's kind of in the midstream. But Neo-Panamax means that it can only fit through the new locks in Panama, which were extended a few years ago. It's bigger than the original locks that were built in Panama. But we also have the post-Panamax, or the mega container ships, which are two times as big as this vessel.
Wow. So not the biggest one out there. So not the biggest one out there, but still massive nonetheless. All right, got to take a quick break here. Back to Kirk Ryder right after this.
How can you keep your tax return safe from hackers? Here's what to know when filing. I'm Jackie DeAngelis with your Fox Business Tax Tip coming up.
Pull up a chair and join me, Rachel Campos Duffy,
and me, former U.S. Congressman Sean Duffy, as we share our perspective on the discussions happening at kitchen tables across America.
Download From the Kitchen Table, the Duffys, at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you download podcasts.
File directly with the IRS if you qualify, says Adam Levin, founder of Cyber Scout. It will ensure you're not dealing with a scammer. Filing early helps to get ahead of hackers. Never use public Wi-Fi, and you can get a PIN code from the IRS to protect your return.
It used to be that you had to be a victim of identity theft. Now everybody can get a PIN. Go to IRS.gov, sign up for it.
Taxpayers can also create an online IRS account. Levin says if you've been hacked, contact the IRS and the Federal Trade Commission. Jackie DeAngelis, Fox News.
This is where Montana talks ag with Lane Nordland.
This Thursday, USDA will release its annual March planting survey, and pre-report analysts are expecting USDA to announce 92 million acres of corn plantings, down from 94.6 million last year. As for all wheat plantings, analysts are expecting to see 47.7 million acres planted across the countryside this year. That's down from 49.6 million acres in 2023.
Are you concerned about the impact government policies could have on your cattle business? One way to make your voice heard in Washington is by joining NCBA. When you join, you'll be part of the nation's oldest and largest national cattle industry organization that has a professional team working in Washington, D.C. on issues that matter to cattle-producing families nationwide. Don't stay on the sidelines. Make your voice heard by joining NCBA today at the website ncba.org.
This Thursday, USDA will also release its March 1st grain stocks report. And for wheat, pre-report expectations are for USDA to find 1.053 billion bushels of wheat on hand as of March 1st. That's up 12% from a year ago and the highest March total in 3 years. As Russia continues to dominate the world wheat market with low prices, wheat prices here in the U.S. continue to be pressured by the lowest export demand in more than 50 years. I'm Lane Nordblond.
serving the great state of Montana. From the peaks of the Beartooths to the banks of the Clark Fork River, this is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Well, so great to catch up here with Billings, Montana native Kirk Ryder, who's got, looks like just a distinguished career in the maritime industry. And it all started with an appointment to the U.S. Merchant Marine Academy back in the mid-1980s. Kirk, we were talking during the break here, you know, paint the picture for our listeners. This, because I've floated next to, you know, serving with the military off the coast of Africa and, you know, visiting places like Savannah, Georgia. You know, I've floated next to these container ships. Yep. And you're just like, my goodness.
It's
insane how big. So first off, this particular ship that hit the bridge in Maryland, you were saying this is like the midsize. This isn't even one of the bigger ones that's out there. But yet, paint the picture. You've got a great Billings, Montana analogy that would say this is how big this vessel is when you compare it to, say, let's just use a downtown Billings analogy to show folks how big this vessel is.
Yeah, sure. I'm glad you liked it. I did some measurements last night on a tool I have, and this vessel is 984 feet. It's not by any means a considerable length. I mean, the Titanic was 800 and something feet, but these vessels are basically large bathtubs that they put all these containers in. So they're massive in nature with their beam and their length. But when I placed the measurements on, Billings, Montana reference, if you were to put this ship on 27th Street, facing towards the airport, and have the stern at Montana Avenue, basically docked right outside the Doubletree, the bow would go all the way up to the Yellowstone County Courthouse. And if this ship were like to take off and kind of go down the road there, as they pass by the courthouse, the captain and the pilot would be able to go out on the bridge wing and hand off a jar of Grey Poupon to people standing on the roof of the courthouse. So that's kind of the scale of what we're dealing with here. And you know, like I said, there's vessels that are twice the size of this would dwarf any of the buildings, even the First Interstate Tower there in Billings.
Wow. Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah, because I was thinking about it. You know, I'm on the 23rd floor of the Doubletree Hotel. So literally, yeah. Literally, as I look west towards the Beartooth Mountains, if the bow of the ship was to my left, right here on Montana Avenue, and then I'd have to go several blocks down. What am I thinking? You know, six blocks, maybe four, five, six blocks down to the Yellowstone County Courthouse. That is the length of this. And then since we don't have a 13th floor here, technically it's 22 floors. But yeah, basically the top of that ship would be about halfway up to the extent of the Doubletree Hotel where I'm standing right now. So, and is that with the amount of the ship that's underwater as well, or is that just what you see above water?
That's just what you see above water. It's kind of a reverse iceberg. You don't have quite as much under the water as you do on above the water. There is a considerable amount. This vessel had a draft of, I'm checking, about 12.2 meters, so roughly 40 feet. The channel that it was operating in, I think, is dredged to 50 feet, so it was able to go in there. But yeah, it's there is a considerable amount of it below the water, but what you see above on deck is really, you know, the majority of the vessel. The other interesting thing that I think your listeners might be interested in hearing is that the people that were operating this vessel were up at that level that we're talking about, you know, on the 13th or 15th floor of the Doubletree, trying to, you know, manage this whole situation. And there was just a few people up on the bow at the time of this. I didn't hear about any shipboard casualties, so I trust that the mates that were up there, the ship's officer and the couple of crew members, got away quickly or were protected, because it's pretty catastrophic with what that bridge did to the bow of the ship.
That's right, because now with the, you know, some of the morning after photos, you can see, you know, massive chunks of the bridge resting on top of the ship. So it's almost amazing that it didn't sink it to a certain extent as well. What are some of the other questions you have just after your career in this industry and doing, I'm assuming you've done investigations on crashes just like this?
Yeah, and, you know, of course there'll be a deep dive into what was the crew doing, what was happening with the vessel before. I find it very interesting. Of course, yeah, I go into my investigative kind of mindset, and I was looking at the port call data it was unusual for this vessel to be spending 2 days and 10 hours in the Port of Baltimore. The Port of Baltimore is not a large container stop for this vessel. They'd just departed New York Harbor and Norfolk the days before, where they spent, you know, barely a day in New York and a little less than a day in Norfolk, but yet they spent 2 days and 10 hours in Baltimore, which strikes me as a little bit unusual. Baltimore does have a very good repair infrastructure. I know there's been some Coast Guard reports out there that the vessel was under some observation for some violations. And I'm curious if it will come out that there were repairs or some work done on maybe some of the equipment that actually ended up failing when they departed the port.
Interesting. And since you work in kind of the marine insurance industry, not sure how much you can share on this front or not, but a few of our listeners have been asking, Monty in Roundup in the 6 o'clock hour, we had a listener in Bozeman also kind of raise a similar question, which is, you know, now people are wondering, okay, so now we, the taxpayers, federal level are going to pay for this bridge. Shouldn't the Singapore flagged vessel pay for the bridge, or how does that all work? How does the how does that piece work? How much does it cover, not cover, et cetera?
Yeah, it's like anything these days. You know, the people who are going to benefit of this are all the lawyers, so they're going to have a lot of discussion. But, you know, when we really look at a loss like this, the information I've received is that a company or a group called the International Group of P&I Clubs insures the vessel under Britannia, which is their syndicate. And they also have a partnership in reinsurance with AXA XL in the amount of $3 billion of reinsurance coverage. And that's pretty typical for a vessel like this, because the consequences of things like this do happen, and they recognize that worldwide. The leading market for the bridge has been reported to be Chubb. There might be other participants in that as a piece of fixed, believe it or not, a bridge is a marine property. So my company that I work for, we insure those types of structures and such. But they'll have claims, obviously, against the vessel for some of their losses. And to the extent that that can be paid, will all be determined by how much money is available. Hopefully the U.S. government won't be on the hook for any of it. I don't think taxpayers should pay for this, but we do have an interest in making sure that this gets repaired, because the Port of Baltimore being active is an important part of our supply chain infrastructure.
Well, and whether just a straight up accident or whether intentional, you said there's a remote chance of that. I did see that General Michael Flynn was referring to it as a black swan event, which could be, you know, a black swan could be just something that has a catastrophic impact, whether it was intentionally caused or unintentionally caused. And so that's the other question, is how big of it sounds like, at least some of the reporting that I'm hearing this morning, they're saying, okay, we're going to be able to divert a lot of the commercial traffic to these other ports in the meantime. But certainly for Baltimore and that East Coast road traffic with that bridge, that's going to be huge. A couple minutes left to go. Kirk Ryder, it's been so great to get your perspective on this. We'll have to get you on again as new developments come out, if you can do it. Big picture, the Merchant Marine Academy. You attended the U.S. Merchant Marine Academy. A lot of young people don't know what an incredible educational opportunity the Merchant Marine Academy is. Because, correct me if I'm wrong, but not only can you work in the maritime industry afterwards if you don't want to go military, or you can take a commission and serve in, I think, any of the military branches, right?
You're absolutely right. Yeah. Consequently, I was an example of that. I went into the Army, commissioned as a second lieutenant. I had classmates that went into the Air Force and logistics. Astronaut Mark Kelly, you probably have all heard of him. He's a Merchant Marine Academy graduate, and we're proud to say that he had more shuttle missions than any of the other academies, including the Air Force and Naval Academy. So, you know, you can really go a whole bunch of different places. All of the academies are a great place to you know, kind of find your way and also contribute to the, you know, the welfare of the United States and do good things. But the Merchant Marine Academy is definitely a unique experience in that you get a very global education. It's definitely, you know, focused on the maritime industry, but really focused on global businesses and global supply chains. So it's a very interesting and unique program that I would encourage anybody to seek out and apply for.
I think even if you were a farmer ranch kid and you wanted to get more of a global agribusiness knowledge and background to supplement what you know about agriculture, I mean, just imagine that type of a combo as well. But yeah, I've served on a military academy nomination board for former when he was the state. Now he's still a congressman, but when he was the statewide congressman, Ryan Zinke, and yeah, everybody would say, "Hey guys, everybody wants to go to the Air Force Academy, or if the Naval Academy is the flavor that year." Merchant Marine is a huge opportunity that a lot of people don't even know about. Kirk Ryder, an honor chatting with you. Thanks for your time this morning. This has been fascinating, and we'll have to catch up again one of these days.
You bet. It was a lot of fun. Hey, shout out to the 406. We'll see you.
All right. Well, let us know if you make it back to town. And, yeah, thanks to Greg Franks for linking us up. This was great.
How can you lower your taxable income? I'm Taylor Riggs, co-host of The Big Money Show, with your Fox Business Tax Tip coming up.
I'm Emily Campagno, and this is the Fox True Crime Podcast, bringing you closer to the story than you ever thought possible. Subscribe at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you download podcasts. These are the stories that keep you up at night.
Tax loss harvesting is a strategy to lower your taxable income. For example, you can sell an investment at a loss by the end of the year and then deduct that loss from your taxable income. It then reduces your overall taxable income that you would have to pay taxes on, potentially reducing your tax liability. NerdWallet says that when losses for a certain year exceed $3,000, the balance can be carried over and deducted on future returns. Watch The Big Money Show weekdays at 1 p.m. Eastern on Fox Business. Taylor Riggs, Fox News.
Hey, if you missed our live show from Lodgegrass, Montana, big thanks to our friend Dylan Dawson with the Little Horn Market in Lodgegrass. We had an incredible time. The full audio of the show is on our Montana Talks website right now, on the Montana Talks podcast, on the app. We caught up with Mayor Quincy. We caught up with Coach Josh Stewart after this show. We had CJ Stewart, the Crow Nation Energy Director, and much more. Incredible time, but really powerful content as well. Check it out, MontanaTalks.com from Lodgegrass.
Serving the great state of Montana, from the peaks of the Beartooths to the banks of the Clark Fork River, this is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Well, it's great to have Dr. Dale Williams from Billings Last Diet in studio with us now. He was telling me they're getting a lot of questions about, you know, these diet pill drugs, if that's what you want to call them, or, you know, some of them are medications that are important medications that folks who are diabetic, they need these medications, but everybody else is out there grabbing these medications because they think it's the magic pill for dieting, and so it's leading to drug shortages and some other challenges, and so anyway, we'll talk about that and more here with Dr. Dale Williams from Billings Last Diet. First, though, Doc, it sounds like you were able to hear our chat with Kirk Ryder. Wasn't that interesting conversation?
Really was. Great insight.
That microphone is not working all of a sudden. Hold on one second. Let me plug it into the other one here. We just had the engineers in the house. Okay, I think this one's working. There we go.
There we go.
All right, he's hot.
Yeah, it was great insights into stuff I didn't understand, and giving some perspective on how large that vessel was is incredible.
Yeah, yeah, and you know, you could probably see it as you were driving into the studio.
I was coming in just as you were describing, like, as you come by the courthouse.
And, yeah, right, there's the courthouse. There's Montana Avenue. Yeah. Wow, if that ship was sitting here right now, it would basically take up an entire chunk of that. I mean, I was thinking the description that he used. I'm trying to think of a Bozeman analogy too. Would it take you all the way from, you know, from the Rockin' R all the way down to the other end of Main Street?
Yeah,
probably at least, you know.
That's huge.
Yeah. Well, you were telling me you're getting a lot of, obviously we're in the middle of spring break right now,
yeah.
So a lot of folks came and saw you and did their tune-ups before spring break, but for the rest of us who aren't on some beach vacation right now, we might be thinking, man, I want to get ready for the summer, and so great opportunity to come down, see you. Get some diet coaching from your team, maybe do a quick tune-up if you've been through the program before, or if you've never been through the program and you're just being, you know, weighed down with all the stress of being overweight, go see Doc Williams and his crew. But you're getting a lot of questions from people about these diet pills, if that's what you want to call them.
Yeah, and they're called GLP-1 inhibitors. They're so glucose-like proteins, and they're designed to regulate blood sugars, but they also have a side effect of having a decrease in appetite. And so people say, well, do these things work? Well, the question is, what does it mean work? Yes, they work. They do decrease the appetite so that people eat less. And when you eat less, you are going to lose weight. But the problem is when they stop using these GLP-1, and most of them are an injection that they do once a week, the weight comes right back on because your appetite comes right back. And so what they need is, if you're going to use those GLP-1s or those Wegovy or Ozempic, you'll need to make sure that you develop a lifestyle so that you don't have to use that drug the rest of your life, because that's not the way they're designed.
Yeah, and every drug can have a side effect, and
gastrophoresis. It's gastrophoresis is kind of a paralyzation of the stomach, so it slows down the emptying of the stomach. So that's why you don't eat as much. You feel full longer for a period of time, and so. But one of the side effects is it does paralyze the stomach a little bit too. So
well, and I remember first hearing about, is it Ozempic that it's called?
Yeah,
I remember first hearing about this because I think Fox News Radio had a story, and they were saying that what was happening was, all these people who wanted the take a pill, lose weight option were taking this pill, but then they were taking it away from diabetic patients that really needed it from just a health standpoint for whatever reason. And so now you've caused shortages and you've caused some, you know, some challenges for folks who need this because they're diabetic, because, you know, celebrity influence out there, influencers and others out there want to take a pill to lose weight.
And it also drove up the cost of it as well, because it was the lack of supply. And so it drove the cost up. That's kind of balanced out a little bit, but it's still, there's still problems. There's still challenges with providing the medication for the diabetics that need the medication.
That's right. Well, and then I also think about, okay, it's reduced your appetite, but even with the reduced appetite, what are you eating?
And that is the problem. There's not a program that says, so it's relatively recent that they've done these, but one of the side effects is they say, yes, you lose weight, but the weight you're losing is muscle. And so we've developed protocol to make sure with our program to make sure we don't lose muscle when we're losing weight. And it's because they're not guiding them on what to eat. It just decreases their appetite.
So they're eating less,
a little less of the crap that they shouldn't have been
eating.
Right.
But you're still eating bad food, by and large.
You're not getting a lifestyle. You're
not getting enough protein. And, your program at Billings Last Diet is an ideal protein program. You want to get the ideal amount of protein because that's how you maintain your muscle mass, which also helps you burn fat. And it's healthier. It strengthens your body. And so it's, especially people that are up there in years, just simple falls are one of the biggest threats.
Yep.
And maintaining that muscle mass is how to prevent yourself from those simple falls.
And your muscle mass is your primary determiner of your metabolism. So if you want to screw up your metabolism, go on a diet where you lose muscle. That'll guarantee that your bad metabolism won't work real well. And so it's important that they get the proper lifestyle with the weight loss as well.
We talk about appetites too. Yeah, going through Billings Last Diet, I have an appetite for vegetables.
Yeah,
and protein, like nothing. Like to me, you know, a steak and asparagus, or a steak, or even a beef patty and some broccoli with some good amount of salt on it. Oh, boy, I tell you what, I don't love nothing better than that almost. Because you develop an appetite for those healthy vegetables. And, you know, I was traveling the state here over the past few days, and sometimes it's when you're traveling, it's a little hard to find those vegetables. I was telling the sidekick I was traveling, I was like, oh, man, I just want to go home, just eat some vegetables real fast, you know. But it's getting better where you can find, even in gas stations, you can find vegetables more and more these days.
Yeah, and boiled eggs, and usually have a little bit of a deli. If it's a larger gas station, they'll have a little deli section there, so people are becoming more conscious of it.
You know, it's interesting when we just talk about medications and pills and people, you know, I'm not telling people to never take medications, sometimes you've got to take medications, but medications can mess with people's weight. And you'll get people that, hey, well, I had this thing going on and I was on these medications and man, my weight just exploded. And so whether it's just, you know, you've gotten to that point in your life where you're like, man, I need to lose the weight, or maybe you were dealing with something for a little while and you know, you put on some pounds. Well, you know, Billings Last Diet and your team of diet coaches, you know how to get those pounds off. I mean, anywhere from the 33 pounds I lost to 133 pounds that some other dieters have lost.
And, you know, one of the common medications that cause weight gain are depression and anxiety medications, and they're being utilized a lot since the pandemic in particular. And so it's really, really hard for somebody that's a little depressed. They go on a medication, and then they start to put on more weight, which makes them more depressed.
Well, exactly.
So it really it becomes a negative feedback cycle. And so it's fun to help those people get their weight under control and get their health back.
You know, I can identify with that depression from putting on weight, especially, you know, when you're somebody who is in the military, was a military veteran. You know, I get back from my military deployment, I'm hitting the gym all the time.
Yeah.
And it's like, man, I gotta keep putting on all these pounds, you know, because you get home and you suffer from post-deployment celebration disorder and you want to eat too much and drink too much, or at least too often, even if not too much. And so it gets depressing. You're like, what the heck? I'm working my butt off in the gym, and yet I just keep putting on these pounds. And because, especially as a military veteran, you want to maintain your fitness, because it's just been so embedded in your psyche, right?
Yeah.
And so it's really depressing. And then when you take that off, it's like, oh my goodness, you got a new lease on life, you know. And man, that's why it really is. It's a life changing program that you're providing for people.
It's fun to see that light bulb go on when we're teaching the class, the introduction to the diet. It's fun to see the light bulb go on in their mind of, oh, that's why I wasn't able to lose the weight with the workout that I was doing. When we put a little bit of science behind exercise and weight loss, and how you can make that exercise fit within a weight loss program. And make it work effectively, but it doesn't work like people think it does.
That's right. That's right. Tim in Billings has a question for you, Doc. Tim, thanks for the call.
Morning, gentlemen. Dr. Williams, quick question. You know, you were talking about like the hard-boiled eggs at the gas stations and stuff like that. And I tend to stay on the higher protein side myself. And one thing that kind of discourages me about like the hard-boiled eggs there, or I drink a lot of fresh brewed iced tea, and I look at like bottled tea, and citric acid is an ingredient in almost everything, and it makes me wonder what do they use the citric acid for? And having fresh made, fresh brewed, whatever, not making your own eggs ahead of time rather than purchasing them, you know, is that more preferable than having one that a product that has citric acid incorporated into it?
Hey, great questions. Yeah.
Fresh is always better, always better. So the citric acid is used as a preservative. So if you were to have a hard-boiled egg and you were to peel that hard-boiled egg and leave it on in the refrigerator for a period of time, it's going to go dark on you. And so they put the citric acid on the outside of the egg to coat it in the egg so that it looks fresh. And well, the same with your iced tea. It's for saving the color.
So all those fresh-made hard-boiled eggs you're doing for Easter, there you go.
And there's doing it. Synchrony Bank empowers you to tackle your savings goals with the newsworthy 4.75% APY on their high-yield savings account. Enjoy flexible access to your money and knowing it's earning a great rate with no monthly fees or minimums. It's never been easier to take control of your financial future. Go to synchronybank.com/radio. Member FDIC.
Fox News commentary.
Instagram quietly changed your content settings to filter out political content. I'm Tommy Lahren with what you need to know next.
I'm Dana Perino, co-host of The 5 and co-anchor of America's Newsroom. Join me for my brand new podcast, Perino on Politics. Listeners of Everything Will Be Okay will gravitate toward this podcast too. Every Monday, I'm going to talk to people I trust in politics as they tell me what they're seeing and thinking in the 2024 election cycle. As they prep me to cover the upcoming election, they'll prep you, the voters, too. Make sure you subscribe to this series on FoxNewsPodcast.com or wherever you download podcasts, and leave a rating and review.
Meta, the parent company of Facebook and Instagram, took it upon themselves to automatically change your content preferences to reduce or filter political content from your feed. This change was made quietly for most users last week, and many of you probably had no idea it was done. Meta announced months ago it would make this move in an effort to protect you from political content in your feed. Really? Are we babies? If you happen to want to view content they deem political, you need to go to your Instagram settings, down to content preferences, and click on the toggle next to political content, then select Don't Limit. Something tells me it'll be conservative-leaning content that is the most impacted by the sneaky little change. Huh, you thought you were slick, Meta. Not so fast. Americans, pay attention. They're doing it right under your nose. I'm Tommy Lahren, and you can watch my show, Tommy Lahren is Fearless, at Outkick.com.
This is the Montana Economic Minute.
People lie about their age, and to list the reasons why would take quite a few sheets of paper.
Maybe they want to get a lower price at Disney World. Perhaps they want to raise their social status or look more attractive to prospective mates. Who knows? But the fuzziness of self-reported age data in aggregate turns out to have implications for public health research. A recent research report noted something remarkable about this problem. Spanning the globe, there have always been individual cities and regions that have a large number of centenarians, those aged 100 or more, which has spurred efforts to discover why, in some countries and regions, there are those who live living longer, more vibrant lives than the rest of us. A new report discovered something a bit more fundamental, because almost all these super centenarian areas happen to be places where official birth records didn't exist when these long-lived folks were born. And so when procedures changed to replace self-reported with actual birth records, those places didn't look so remarkable anymore. I'm Patrick Burke.
Brought to you by the
University. That's 406-201-6263. 406-201-6263.
Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, this is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right. Hey, we got a great 8 o'clock hour of the show coming up for you this morning as well. If you're one of those folks that, you know, you're driving to work right now, but then at 8 o'clock you're stuck at a desk, can't listen in normally, well, get some earbuds, download the Montana Talks app because you're going to want to keep listening because we've got Coach Lou Holtz, the legendary Coach Lou Holtz. He's going to join us live at 8:20 this morning, and then Stephen Miller, the prominent border policy advisor to President Donald J. Trump. Stephen Miller went off on Liberal Senator John Tester over the weekend over a series of bad votes where he voted against Montana and against our country. So Stephen Miller is going to join us live here on the show at 8:40. No, he won't be in studio. I know some of you were like, hey, if he's in studio, I'm coming down there. He'll be on the phone lines with us, but it'll be great to catch up with him nonetheless. We hit that hard break there and didn't get a chance to tell you when their next free seminar is coming up. Dr. Dale Williams with Billings Last Diet. Again, I would encourage everybody to give you a call. 294-6751 or check out BillingsLastDiet.com. When's your next free seminar coming up?
Right after Easter. So we'll have April 2nd will be the next evening seminar. We always have one on Wednesday. So we have one today. Every Wednesday at noon, we do a noon seminar. But we encourage you to come learn about how your body works and how you can get healthy and stay healthy for the rest of your life.
Post-Easter is a good time to get started, too. You know, you get that one last big holiday meal in, if that's what you want to do. And then after that, get started, and then you've got time to get ready for the summer.
Even all those who have done the program before, remember that April and October are the times that I recommend that you do tune-ups, because it's just at the end of the holidays and before the spring. For April, so we encourage you to come in.
Great time to do a tune-up or get started for the first time. All right, Doc, thanks for sticking with us.
Thanks, sir.
All right, let's see. A couple of minutes left in the program here. What should we start the 8 o'clock hour by talking about? We've got Coach Lou Holtz joining us at 8:20. Then we've got Stephen Miller joining us at 8:40. So that gives us about the first 20 minutes or so to yap about some other stuff in the news. Maybe I'll start the 8 o'clock hour by talking about this story. KTVH-TV has this headline: sponsors of proposed abortion measure object to Attorney General Austin Knutson's ballot statement. So the radical abortion activists are trying to get a pro-abortion initiative on the ballot this November. But see, here's the thing. They don't want Montana voters to know the truth of what their initiative would actually do. They don't want Montana voters to know that this initiative would basically support abortion on demand all the way up to the due date. They don't know how radical they don't want Montanans to know just how radical and sick and twisted this abortion ballot initiative would actually be. So that's why they don't like the Attorney General Austin Knutson's ballot language that he approved, because it tells the truth about what their ballot initiative would actually do. They don't want voters to see the truth on the ballot. So anyway, we'll talk about that and more coming up in the 8 o'clock hour. Or if you got something you want to talk about, you can join us as well. Hey, we were talking about Easter dinner, and some of you are thinking, man, I haven't even planned an Easter dinner yet. I don't even know what we're going to do for Easter. Well, let me tell you what. We've got a beautiful view here on the 23rd floor of the Doubletree Hotel in downtown Billings. The 20th floor, that's where the Montana Sky Restaurant is located. And the Montana Sky Restaurant, if you haven't heard, they've got a brand new chef, brand new kitchen team. Chef Ryan Lopez got to sample some of their entrees here, a couple of different entrees over the past couple of weeks. Very impressive. They're going to be doing a special Easter menu for Easter Sunday as well. So, you know, bring the kids, bring the whole family. They're going to have a prime rib carving station. They're going to have some Cajun shrimp, whole lineup of desserts as well. So check out the Montana Sky Restaurant, whether it's for Easter Sunday or, hey, breakfast and dinner, 6A to 10A.